This week on Stateside, we're going to explore issues regarding higher education. We'll look at how student debt affects people in the long run and who actually has access to a college degree. But first, these are challenging financial times in the world of higher education, both for students and parents who wrestle with tuition costs, and for the colleges and universities who wrestle with shrinking state funding. And even as Michigan employers complain they cannot find the workers with enough training, education, and skills to meet their job openings, school funding from Lansing is shrinking. Michigan is now in the bottom 10 states in per-student spending on higher education. Just how has decreased state funding impacted higher education in our state? What's it mean for the colleges and universities and the students? To explore these questions, we welcome the Vice Provost of the University of Michigan, Martha Pollack, and the Dean of the College of Education at Michigan State University, Don Heller. Let me start by asking each of you, just how has state funding changed in the last decade? Martha?
Well, here at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, our state funding on a per-student basis has declined by more than 50%. That's in real terms. And so that has had a real impact on us, no question about it.
And from you and East Lansing, Don.
Yeah, it's a very similar situation here. We've suffered the same similar size cuts in per student funding from the state, and it certainly does affect our university as well, both in terms of our ability to fund services and the tuition we have to charge our students.
So why do you think this is happening? I mean, obviously we've got a challenged economy in Michigan, but is there some broader national trend we're seeing, and has higher education maybe become less crucial to the lawmakers who hold the purse strings?
Well, you're right that the declines have been greater in Michigan than elsewhere, but this is definitely a national trend. Across the country, we've seen very significant declines in funding for education. And it's surprising to me because we're at a time when education is more important than ever for our economy.
And your thoughts, Don?
Yes, Martha's absolutely right. This is part of a broader national trend, and it's true that we've gotten hit worse than most other states here in Michigan. And I think the primary reason is that legislators and governors around the country have learned over the years that when they give less money to higher education institutions, the institutions simply respond by raising tuition and trying to maintain the quality of the instruction that they offer to students. And legislators and governors have gotten that lesson very loud and clear, and they realize that they can cut appropriations to higher education institutions and not really harm the quality of the instruction that much.
Which leaves all of you who run the colleges and universities furiously paddling like ducks underwater trying to keep up with that.
Yes. Don mentions tuition, and you know, all the news these days is about the skyrocketing tuition costs. If you look at our tuition growth over the past decade, it's been 5.09% on average. That's very high. That's very, very high growth. But if you take out the amount that replaces what the state lost, plus a little bit extra that we've put into financial aid to help needy students so that they're not, they're still able to access the university, what you're left with are increases that would have been just 2.32%, which is less than inflation. Now, we've done that through very, very aggressive cost containment. We've driven $235 million a year out of our budget by focusing on operational kinds of activities, energy, shifting health costs to staff and faculty and so on. But the low-hanging fruit is gone, and it's getting harder and harder and harder to find those cuts.
That's well put. The low-hanging fruit is gone. And to both of you, I guess the question would be, at some point, you've cut all you can cut. Then what? Obviously, lawmakers and governors have learned they can chop away at that higher education money, and there's no real squawking. You just tighten your belt a little more. What do you do when it's as tight as it's going to get?
Well, I think that one of the things that you do is you try to assess just what you can do with tuition increases. And as Martha said, every institution, particularly public institutions that have faced these cuts, have tried to be very cautious in not raising tuition any more than they feel that they can. I think the other thing to keep in mind, and Martha mentioned this briefly, is that there's been a lot of focus on the sticker price of college and what's happened with sticker prices. There's been much less focus on the actual net price, and that's the amount that students pay after all of the grant aid that they get from federal government, the state government, and the institutions. And just like at UM here at Michigan State, we've been trying to increase our grant aid to students, particularly financially needy students, so we can help them offset the cost of those tuition increases through financial aid.
But at some point, the tuition increases can't happen anymore. It's going to be the cost of a private tuition bill, and that's sticker shock, believe me, having gone through the college search. So what does this mean for students? If you've tightened the belt as much as you think you can tighten, that low-hanging fruit is gone, what's ahead for students?
I don't think there's a magic bullet, a silver bullet. There is no silver bullet out there. So it used to be that higher education was a public good with lots of support from the state, from all the people who pay taxes. Over time, it's become a private good. It's clear that the private expenses are too much. And so what we're looking at is a different good. And I think the question that all of us in academic leadership are grappling with is, what should that good be? And how can we make sure that it really is still good, that we preserve the value of an education? But I would be very careful about people who are offering silver bullets.
Don?
Yeah, I agree. You know, the pattern we've seen in past recessions going back to the 1980s is during the recession, states would cut or level fund higher education. And then once the recession was over and revenues returned, that they would then pump more money into the system. But, you know, pretty much every observer across the country believes that we're going to see a very different pattern after this recession, that we're not going to see states refunding higher education to the extent they were in the past. And, of course, after the prior recession, the early part of the 2000s, Michigan never really did rebound in terms of funding for higher education. They continued to cut funding over the course of the entire decade. So, we simply have to accept the fact here in Michigan, at least in higher education, that we're not going to be getting much more money from the state. And that's sort of the new normal that we're dealing with. And we're going to have to figure out how to go forward with other sources of revenue. You know, here at Michigan State, as I'm sure they are at Michigan, we have a huge emphasis on trying to get externally funded research as ways of getting in more streams of revenue, as well as philanthropy. We're going to be heading into a new campaign in the near future, and we're going to be looking at getting funding for things like faculty professorships, as well as student support. And those are all things that are going to be critical to replace that money we have been getting from the state.
I want to follow on to what Don said, because I think this is really, really important. There is a crisis. The model we have is not sustainable. But I do think that the public needs to focus on the actual cost of college and not the sticker price and the typical loan, not the extreme case of a student graduating with $100,000.
All right.
We, similar to Michigan State, have put enough into our financial aid so that for the past 4 years, students with financial need from within state, from in-state, mm-hmm. in-state students have seen no increase in their cost of attendance. So we've added enough financial aid each year that they've seen no increase. And in fact, on average, they pay less than they did in 2004. That news story isn't out there. And I think that's really important.
Where is that financial aid money coming from?
Well, we have basically two main sources of funding in the general fund. One is state appropriation, which, as you know, has been shrinking, and the other is tuition. Mm-hmm. We also rely very heavily on philanthropy.
Martha, you actually teach a course at the University of Michigan. This is what actually drew our attention to this. It made the papers all over the state. You're teaching a course that basically teaches students how your university builds its budget. Why did you decide to offer that course?
Yeah, I am. I'm teaching that course jointly with the provost. We've always had a student budget advisory committee. So we bring in a group of students each year to get their advice on where we should be investing our money and what they're seeing as stresses. And as part of that, we teach them about the budget because mm-hmm. that's how they can give sensible, informed answers. The students have been so helpful to us and so enthusiastic about it that we thought, gee, why keep this to 12 students? We should have a course. And so we've had been a one-credit mini course. And the focus has been to talk not just about how the University of Michigan builds its budget, but more generally about the challenges of college affordability and the funding models.
So what do you think the kids who are taking the class are getting out of it? What are you hearing from them?
We're hearing multiple things. I don't think many of them realized how complicated the situation is. I think a number of them have been very appreciative of the efforts that we've gone to hold tuition costs down. I mean, if you read mm-hmm. the newspapers, you don't read about that. I think they've also been much more able to understand what the value of an education is, what the return of an investment is, how you should think about loans and so on. You know, in this course, we don't tell students what to think. We never tell University of Michigan students what to think. But we do expect University of Michigan students to be informed when they make decisions and when they state opinions. And so this goal is just to give them background information.
I'd like to ask both of you your thoughts on something we're seeing more and more colleges and universities doing, which is offering online courses, in many cases free ones, these massive open online courses. It's seen in some quarters, Time Magazine has a big cover story about it, as a growing trend toward online education as a way to save money for students. Your thoughts, both of you, on that?
Well, there's been a lot of publicity, as you said, Cynthia, around MOOCs, the massively open online courses, and I think that the jury is still out as to what kind of impact these are going to have on sort of the bread and butter part of higher education, which is undergraduate education students who are looking to obtain a bachelor's degree. There's, certainly a lot of promise in technology, but I think that if anybody thinks that the MOOCs are going to be the solution to helping to hold down the cost growth in higher education, I just don't think that's going to be the reality. Certainly, to reach people who otherwise wouldn't have access to higher education courses, there's lots of promise there. But the idea that these are going to replace the traditional bachelor's degree, at least any time in the near future, I just don't think that's going to hold.
I completely agree. We've been very heavily involved with Coursera, which is one of the large providers of MOOCs. And we're putting the courses out there for many of the reasons that Don mentions, to reach out to people who don't have an access to education. That's consistent with being a public university, to connect with our alumni, and frankly also to learn more about the use of this technology so that we can supplement what we do on campus with online technology mm-hmm. in appropriate ways. But I think a lot of the hype out there about how MOOCs are going to bend the cost curve, MOOC, of course, stands for Massive Open Online Course, and I think people have confused the massive and online. So massive is cheap. Teaching to 100,000 students at once is cheap, but it is not the same thing as being in a classroom, grading papers, going to lectures, having one-on-one time with your faculty. Online is completely orthogonal. You can have a perfectly excellent online course, but to 20 or 30 students. I don't see it as an immediate solution to the cost problems in higher ed.
I want to ask both of you, by the way, if you're just joining us, we want to let you know that we are talking about higher education and the challenges facing higher education as state funding shrinks dramatically here in Michigan, down 50%. And that is a big hit for both the University of Michigan and Michigan State University and the other institutions in Michigan. I'm speaking with the Vice Provost of the University of Michigan, Martha Pollack, and the Dean of the College of Education at Michigan State University, Don Heller. Something that jumped out at me in this big recent Time magazine cover story, they did a poll and found 80% of the adults they surveyed said at many colleges the education that kids are getting isn't worth what they paid for it. And then, surprisingly to me, 41% of the college presidents and senior administrators surveyed agree with them. Martha, you flinched.
Yeah, I flinched because I really worry that there are students out there who will not go to college because of that. Very recently, the New York Times had an article right on the front page that was talking about changes in the cost of living. And buried in that article was a quote that I think is incredibly important and is true, saying that the college wage premium is at a near all-time high. That is, the amount of money a college graduate earns relative to someone with a high school graduate is bigger than it's just about ever been. Bloomberg Businessweek does a return on investment analysis each year. And for students coming out of the University of Michigan, the 30-year return on investment is somewhere between – well, now it's actually really interesting. If you compare it to the average high school student, mm-hmm. it's between $900,000 and $1 million. If you compare it to the high school student in the 75th percentile, it's between $500,000 and $600,000. So even if you say it's not fair to compare against students who go just to high school, it's the input and not the output. Even if you look at the higher earning high school students, the 30-year payoff is $500,000 to $600,000. That's a great investment. If someone offered you that investment, you would take it in a heartbeat. So I worry about qualified students foregoing college because of misleading information about its value.
And Don, you're an educator, Dean of the College of Education. Give me your thoughts.
Well, I have a very similar perspective. The data are very clear that on average, attending college, getting a bachelor's degree today, even with higher tuition, even with the amount of money students are borrowing, is still a very good investment. And of course, there are huge differences across different majors. So somebody who's getting a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering is, of course, going to earn more money than somebody getting a bachelor's degree in social work or early childhood education. But nevertheless, it's still a very good investment. And, the question I usually ask people when they're asking me, should I send my child to college still, given how expensive it is, I say to them, well, think about what your child's odds are going to be if they enter the labor markets with only a high school diploma and have to spend the next 40 to 50 years with only that high school diploma and no further education. Ask yourself that question and then determine whether you think college is still a good investment or not.
And, you know, the other thing I think you need to look at is unemployment figures. So the unemployment rates for college graduates are down around 4.4%, and they just step up and up and up as you look at some college, just high school, some high school. Even in the peak of the recession, unemployment rates for college graduates were, you know, about 6% or so. So it really I think there are lots of reasons to go to college, but even on pure financial gains, it's still a great investment.
What do you think, both of you, about an idea that I think you have discussed, Don, the idea of differential tuition? You had mentioned the difference between somebody going into, say, chemical engineering versus someone maybe with a pure liberal arts degree and what their earning potential would be. Would there be any merit to kind of having a sliding scale for tuition rates depending on what you're going into and what you might expect to earn?
Absolutely. I think there's great merit to it. And at the my previous institution, Penn State, that I used to work at, we had had a discussion about this when we were looking at opportunities to increase revenue and cut our expense budget. I think that most higher education institutions at some point are going to come to this. And there are some forms of differential tuition, both, I believe, at UM as well as here at MSU. We charge a little bit higher tuition for juniors and seniors than we do for freshmen and sophomores. But I think with the cost of the education growing and also the returns to different majors really being differentiated, I think at some point in the not-too-distant future, we're going to find institutions having to look at the question of whether, in fact, students who major in subjects that do have higher earnings and in many cases are more expensive. You know, the science and engineering programs are more expensive because of the laboratory space, things like that. I think we're going to have to wrestle with this decision of whether, in fact, we shouldn't be charging different tuition for different majors.
Yeah, we're already there. We haven't actually based our differential tuitions on the different salaries that students will earn, but on the costs. But exactly as Don mentions, our engineering school, for example, has a higher tuition than arts and sciences, and that's because the cost of educating an engineer is higher.
A very interesting conversation. I want to thank both of you for talking with us today and sharing insights from the University of Michigan, the Vice Provost Martha Pollack, and from Michigan State University, the Dean of the College of Education, Don Heller. Thanks for joining us today on Stateside.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
And we'll continue the conversation about higher education tomorrow when we explore a huge issue, student debt. As we heard, state funding in Michigan's been cut in half over the last decade. And when it comes to helping students in the state, need-based grants have been cut by one-fifth. Michigan spends the least in grant dollars per student in the Midwest, and we're 40th in the nation when it comes to offering grants to students. Tomorrow, we talk with a student who defaulted on her loans, and we'll talk to a panel of experts about student debt and how people can avoid piling up thousands of dollars in loans.